This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Scott Roeder of Evidence Room is joining us today. We're going to be talking about the bizarreness of the Murdaugh family being right there at the crime scene, having access to the crime scene, SLED releasing the crime scene as quickly as they did. What the hell's going on? It just seems like this was a double murder investigation, and it just moments later, you have the brother of Alec Murdaugh down there with bleach and Lysol and cleaning it up and having a traumatic experience of his own. I'm not questioning the brother's motives at all. I think he was trying to be a good human being. But the fact that this was allowed to take place, we're like, yeah, go on down there. We don't need to investigate this anymore, is utterly baffling to me. Scott Roeder, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a good point, Tony. I mean, you should, on a scene like this, I would expect that you should have it secured and experts on the scene from the Bureau of Criminal Investigations investigating. It's a big property. You know, it's kind of a compound, an old style Southern compound. And they did not go through that property, I think, sufficiently. And to release it and have, you know, you would think with the family, you know, that's a reasonable expectation that the family would come and help out, that is a little bit separated from the emotional aspect of what happened. So that doesn't alarm me that the brother would come down and help clean up. It does, however, alarm me that they released the scene so quickly. And I think you're seeing some of that play out at the trial. And, you know, I have some comments about that. I mean, I think the trial is moving very quickly toward a hung jury.
I think we're headed there as well. I mean, there's so many things that are very damning, but there's a lot of reasonable doubt that is being put into this, a lot of emotion being put into this. I was just shocked, though, as far as how quickly people were allowed to get in there. The way that he found Maggie's phone, it was simply using the Find My iPhone app. He let the investigators even know, hey, I'm getting the ping. Here's where I believe it is. But he's the one who went and got the phone.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it just shows the lack of interest to do a complete investigation. I mean, I think that, you know, what you have a lot of times in law enforcement is an assumption of what happened right from the get-go. And that a lot of times stunts their ability and motivation to continue to look for other evidence. And, you know, the phone would be a critical piece of evidence that if I was at the scene, you're going to want to collect up the phone and any personal effects of the deceased people, because there's going to be evidence in there that's reflective of what was happening prior to them being killed. And that's critical information.
I don't know if they're looking at this as, because we're hearing the defense of Murdaugh criticizing SLED investigators, although they seem to be buddy-buddy with them all the way up through this. But now, they weren't thorough enough. I mean, wouldn't Alec have, and his attorney brothers, been able to recognize early on if SLED is in there contaminating the scene or not doing their job properly? And if Alec is the one who allegedly did this, would he not be happily letting them do their job haphazardly because he knows in the end this is going to benefit him?
Well, I think you're right. But if there's any truth to the assertion by Murdaugh that he was taking up to 1,000 or 1,200 milligrams of oxycontin or oxycodone per day up until the time of this incident and then afterwards, I would not expect him to be of any kind of sound mind to be plotting his own defense at that time. You know, I think that's an unimaginable amount of opiates to have in your system to
sure.
still be able to, you know, plot out some kind of a rational reaction to what's going on. But, I mean, you know, it could be right, though. If they're just, you know, stumbling through the scene let them do their job, and that could be to your benefit. But they've hired some good experts on their side that are very reputable, such as Timothy Palmbeck, mm-hmm. who testified. And I thought his testimony was extremely credible as to alternative theories.
What were some of the theories that Timothy testified to that really stood out to you?
Well, Dr. Palmbeck, just for a little bit of background, he's a tenured professor at the University of New Haven School of Forensic Science and my former instructor. Great man personally. He took, just to give you a little bit of background, he took time off from his career to track down international child trafficking rings. Okay, this guy is a very credible guy. He does not chase the money. He's of a high moral character, and I can't say that about a lot of people. But when he testified that there's most likely two shooters. And I think that that has a lot of credibility to it because of the nature of the shot to Paul was very, very close. And he said that the shooter would have had to have time to recover from that shot and to be able to then switch guns and kill the wife would be a very difficult thing to have happen in such a short period of time. So I think the two-shooter theory holds some water.
And that's an interesting one. If there is a two-shooter theory, is this or are these people other than Alec Murdaugh being involved? Or is Alec one of the two?
Well, I mean, the prosecution has clearly put the theory out there that Alec himself killed both his wife and his son, right? So if the defense can formulate a two-shooter theory, then that gives enough reasonable doubt in the jury to vote not guilty. Depending on what the jury instructions look like, I think that testimony from Timothy Palmbeck, to me, when I watched it today, was extremely powerful as to putting out a theory that is possible. Now, you know, you always have to be careful what's possible versus what's probable. And I think the defense in these kinds of cases, they're investigating other possibilities. Now, the jury has to weigh, is that probable enough to create reasonable doubt? I think his testimony was extremely effective in that regard, though.
Yeah, it certainly, I think, was. I mean, there's a lot of things in here where obviously he's talking to not necessarily facts, but the evidence based on the science that he knows. When we were talking about emotion, that has been the other large part of this that I think is creating or has a chance to create potential reasonable doubt here in the mind of the jury. When we're talking about Alec Murdaugh and his testimony several days ago, give me your thoughts on that. We really haven't touched on that yet to get your reaction to all of that. I'll let you start wherever you want and what you observed.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, I have to look at it. My first reaction, just as a person, he is, you know, as a Northerner, you think maybe it's a little bit contrived. I'm up here in the northern sure. part of the United States, as are you, and it maybe seemed a little contrived. But then you look at it from the perspective of people in South Carolina, and he's a good old boy from South Carolina, and I think he is a very charming guy. I think he is going to be evoking some sympathy. You know, I find his testimony and the way he's handling himself on the stand, especially under such vigorous cross-examination, he's holding up fairly well. And I think the prosecutor, I think Mr. Allen is his name, is not doing himself any favors trying to beat him up into an answer. And I think prosecutors do that sometimes because, you know, they're trying to, you know, vigorously, you know, prosecute the case. But I think hostility from the lawyer to the witness never plays good to the jury. The goal, I think, should be to get the witness upset and excited. But it seems like the lawyer, the prosecutor, is the one who's getting upset and excited at the answers that Mr. Murdoch is given. So, you know, just from standing back from it and just looking at his testimony in a capsule, I think he's doing pretty well for himself. And I think what you're seeing there is a lifelong lawyer who knows what he's doing up there on the stand. Now, that doesn't say whether he's guilty or innocent, but just looking at his testimony by itself, he, I think, is evoking some sympathy from his fellow South Carolinians on that jury.
No one likes a smug individual, even if they're right. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot of with Creighton Waters, who is the prosecutor. When we look at his demeanor, when Alec is giving a response to the questions, you hear kind of a lot of off to the side comments. Yeah, sure, you did this or that. And I get it. I think a lot of us think those things in our mind, but when it's spoken out loud to the jury, it kind of creates a whole different dynamic of, oh, well, this guy really thinks he knows his stuff. Even if he does, it's one of those things. Sometimes less is more, and learn what to say out loud and learn what not to say out loud, because it's an impression. And those impressions mean a lot. And I don't think he's doing himself any favors with his, you know, kind of sly comebacks at Alec. I mean, Alec can dig his own grave. He's pretty good at that. But if you want to start getting him sympathy, you know, start being a dick to him. And he can, Alec, I think, will hold himself as the aw shucks, paw paw, mama, and Miss Cherry Lane down the road. Well, let me tell you about that apple, this doesn't have anything to do with this. Let me give you context on the apple pie. You know, it's just things that Alec will get away with if they continue to kind of put him in that corner. Obviously, he's off the stand now, but I felt it was very weak cross on that. It didn't seem to do anybody any favors. It almost felt like at one point, like he was just kind of throwing things at the wall and seeing what stuck, which was what it seemed like the defense was doing for a while. Then the prosecution was kind of doing that with Alec. I noticed some of the things that Creighton was bringing up were straight off of some of the podcasts that several of us are doing, straight off some of the Twitter feeds that a lot of us in this circle who are covering it have said, specifically bringing up Family Annihilator, which, yes, it's an interesting term. It sounds horrible. Nobody understands what the hell it is. And he gave no context to it either. It was just kind of a lot of, I don't know. It didn't seem to land very well with
anyone.
Here's
my thoughts on that.
Yeah.
I've been involved on several cases where my testimony was covered live on Twitter and on the news and all that stuff. The number one, as a lawyer, I can't speak for lawyers because I'm not a lawyer, but as an expert testifying, you never want to read your own reviews, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to see how the world is talking about you while you're in the, before you testify or during your testimony. Maybe afterward you can take a peek at it, just kind of get the tempo of things, but never before or while you're doing it. I feel like the prosecutor's falling victim to reading his own press clippings and playing to the Twitter jury rather than the jury that he has right there in the courtroom. And I think that's a big mistake. And I think you bring that up, Family Annihilator. It's a good point because that brings me to, I think, the biggest flaw in the prosecution's case, and that is a clearly defined motive.
Sure.
Which I don't think there is a clearly defined motive at this time.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
We got a lot more to come. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any breaking updates and discussions on the case as we have them for you. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony B Pod. Get an ad-free experience of the show through Apple Podcasts right now. And you get access to all of our shows. All the cases that we're following for you on their individual channels. You can do that through Apple Podcasts and even try it for 3 days free. Do check that out. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.